Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Big changes being proposed for NASA and America's space program. No new moonshot. Spaceships built and launched by private companies. All this as the space shuttle, NASA's current workhorse and orbital taxi, goes away. Some are outraged, calling the new NASA budget a retreat from space. Others say it's a vital change in trajectory. We'll hash it out this hour on Point. What's next for NASA and the United States in space? You can join the conversation. Is it right to scrap a return to the moon and hire space taxi workout to private companies? How will we feel when it's Chinese boots in the lunar dust? Where should NASA be aiming? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And a special welcome today to our newest listeners at WBOI in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We're glad to have you with us. Later this hour, we will hear from former astronaut and second man to walk on the moon, Buzz Aldrin, who's all for NASA's new shift. Let's hear a little bit from this morning. The space shuttle Endeavour roaring off the launch pad, delivering six astronauts and a new observation deck to the International Space Station in what will likely be NASA's last nighttime shuttle launch.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
Engines are lit.
Just a handful of those remain. Joining me first today from Merritt Island, Florida, right next to Cape Canaveral in the Kennedy Space Center, is William Harwood. He's space analyst for CBS News and writes at CBS's Space Place blog. He's been covering the American space program for 15 years. Bill Harwood, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Tom. Glad to be here.
I'm not a space guy. I'm trying to figure this out. I see people saying, my gosh, President Obama and this new budget are, you know, shuttering our space program, sort of more or less closing it down. And others saying, this is great. This is exactly what we need to be doing. What's going on, Bill?
Well, it really depends on where you look at this philosophically. You know, there are some people that think next year is the 50th anniversary of Yuri Gagarin's first flight into space, and that after five decades, space travel should be something you could turn over to private industry. The old heads at NASA, the guys that understand mission operations, how you put missions together, how you plan them, how you train astronauts, how you set all this up and make it work, they view this as nothing short of a disaster. They believe that if we're not abandoning manned spaceflight, certainly the corporate knowledge that's been built up over the past many decades at NASA is going to walk out the door. I think a lot of folks think that safety might be compromised because, after all, we're talking about taking some companies that have barely launched anything and expecting them to carry cargo and people to the station within just a few years. And it's not easy. You know, space travel is one of those things that only superpowers have been able to engage in successfully. And it's not an easy thing to do. So I think there's a lot of angst and trepidation on the part of the old hands at NASA. And I think there's jubilation and excitement on the part of people with private industry who believe that if they get their shot at this, they can do a better job of it.
Lay out for us what's being proposed here. It's not as though NASA is going to go away. It will still have a big budget. But some big programs, including the one President Bush announced to go back to the moon, off the table.
That's right. Last year, the Obama administration hired set up a blue ribbon panel to look at NASA's direction, the Bush administration's Constellation program, that was the moon program, and to see what could be done with the amount of money NASA had and was projected to get. They came back and laid out a series of proposals and said none of these are possible if NASA doesn't get significantly more money, on the order of $3 billion a year, more than they were projected to get. And that included the Constellation program. It also included something the panel called Flexible Path, where you turn over the launches to low Earth orbit up and down to the space station to private industry, and then let NASA focus on building a big heavy lift rocket and setting up flights either back to the moon or to near Earth asteroids, perhaps the moons of Mars in the years ahead. In other words, an exploration component. Turn over the nuts and bolts back and forth to low Earth orbit to private industry, and then let NASA focus on the more glamorous exploration. What the Obama administration did is they agreed with the plan to kill the Constellation program. They agreed to turn over
the moon program.
That's right. Yep. And they agreed to turn the taxi service over to private industry. But they did. But the Obama administration did not provide the funding or direction for the exploration leg. So Some folks say it's it's flexible path without the path. In other words, without that heavy lift rocket in the wings, there really isn't anything beyond this low Earth orbit component to the station until perhaps another administration steps in down the road and gets it going. So there are a lot of folks that think that the exploration part of it's over and that that's a bad thing to do. The commercial stuff, we're going to have to wait and see. There was a lot of work had been done on the Constellation program, and I don't know if any of that work can transfer over to private industry or not, or whether some of those companies will put together commercial bids, perhaps, to build capsules and rockets. I expect something like that to happen. But it's really up in the air. Congress, there are many in Congress that are opposed to this, and whether any deal-making takes place to either resurrect some components of Constellation or whether all of that's going to be totally written off, really remains to be seen. I honestly don't know what's going to happen.
A lot of congressmen who have NASA and spaceflight jobs in their home districts are very upset about this. Is it possible that, you know, they'll step up, the Congress will come in and say, no, we're sticking with this, whether or not the White House wants to?
And Tom, I have to apologize. I'm having trouble hearing you in my headset, but I believe you're talking about what Congress might be able to come in and do.
Yes,
and
yes.
Everyone's expecting a fight over this. The question is, you know, how strongly does the administration believe their plan is the only plan, and how willing might they be to compromise and make a deal? And I think the folks at NASA, and even some in private industry, are hoping that some changes can be made. There's a lot of disquiet over this plan, but on the other hand, that's old school talking. Some in the new school really think this is the way to go. I just don't know how strong politically the sides on both sides are going to be.
We're going to hear the sides in this debate over America's future in space in this hour. William Harwood at Merritt Island in Florida, CBS News space analyst there. Bill, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Tom.
In a press conference last week, NASA Administrator Charles Bolden introduced representatives of seven private companies that NASA would fund to develop new manned spacecraft.
Courtesy of President Barack Obama, it's my pleasure to introduce to you in person these space pioneers. I'd like to ask the representatives of each of the companies to join me on stage and say a few words. Ladies and gentlemen, these are the faces of the new frontier. The Vanguard.
The new frontier, the Vanguard, and it's not astronauts, it's space travel companies, private industry, being brought in to share the work with NASA. Joining us now from Bethesda, Maryland, is Howard McCurdy. He's a space policy expert and professor of public affairs at American University. His books include Faster, Better, Cheaper, Low-Cost Innovation in the U.S. Space Program, and Space and the American Imagination. Howard McCurdy, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you.
Also with us from Alexandria, Virginia, is John Pike. He's a security and space analyst, founder of GlobalSecurity.org. John Pike, a big welcome to you as well.
Good to be here.
So, Howard, is this a gloom and doom moment, or are we opening up a new way into space that may work better? How do you see it?
That press conference you just mentioned was one of the most dramatic moments in the history of the space program since 1959, when the Mercury 7 astronauts were introduced. This is the Vanguard 7. It's as much of a pioneering effort, and it's probably as risky as appointing the Mercury 7 astronauts. But in general, it's been a very disappointing last 10 years or so since we've had the announcement and the planning for Project Constellation. The original roadmap for it has turned out to be quite faulty. If people think we were going to the moon if we just spent an additional $3 billion a year, they were probably pretty misled, because the program was already in great difficulty. The original assumptions that underlie the program had been violated regularly. So it's kind of a continuation of a story we've heard from NASA for the past 30 or 40 years with the space shuttle and the International Space Station. Things cost too much, they take too long, and technologically they turn out to be more difficult than people originally envisioned.
John Pike, I've seen the Constellation program that was supposed to go to the moon described as over budget, behind schedule, plagued with technological problems. So maybe it was not on track anyway, John.
Well, I think that there are two different issues here. One of them is where we're going, and the other one is how we're getting there. I think the positive element of the Bush administration program was they had a goal. The downside was how they were going to get there, a program that I think was overly complex, overly expensive, and evidently unaffordable.
So how do you see the division of labor now, John? If this all turns out as the NASA administrator would like to see it, what will private companies do, and what will NASA do?
Well, the private companies, left to their own devices, are going to kill some astronauts. The problem is...
Meaning what?
Well, meaning big funerals at Arlington Cemetery after the astronauts are killed rocket that was built by a company that had no experience building a rocket, and in my opinion, no business building a rocket. This is an enormously difficult, enormously risky business, and the idea that we can bring in some companies with no experience in this field and expect them to launch astronauts safely without significant supervision, I think we're going to look back and recognize this as having been a bad decision.
There's a lot to look at here, but Howard, just on that front, NASA, of course, has its own experience with astronauts dying. It's dangerous business, but do you see significant safety issues in farming this low Earth orbit work out to private companies?
Well, space flight's a risky business. It's as risky as open-heart surgery, if not more so. And I don't know that it makes a difference whether the private sector does it or whether or not the government does it. Back in the 1960s, there were only a few hundred people that knew a lot about rocket science. Some of them were concentrated at the Huntsville Center with the German team under Wernher von Braun. Since that time, the knowledge about rocket science has become more dispersed in the society. I don't know if they picked the right companies in this case. We'll find that out through the competition. But another realization is that NASA has been contracting out its space operations for human spaceflight since 1996 anyway, through the United Space Alliance. We think that NASA launches the shuttle. It launched one this morning, but in fact, that's just the people in the front row that are NASA employees. 90 to 95% of the work is really done by private contractors from Boeing and Lockheed Martin. So the understanding of rocket science is much more dispersed than it was 50 years ago.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about NASA dropping the shuttle, dropping a return to the moon, turning to private companies, and whether we're retreating from space or finding a better way forward. We've been joined in this hour by Howard McCurdy at the American University, professor of public affairs there, knows a lot about space. John Pike with GlobalSecurity.org joins us from Alexandria, Virginia. We'll be joined in just a moment by Buzz Aldrin, the second man on the moon. Here's a little tape from 1959 first, NASA's first administrator, T. Keith Glennon, holding his own press conference in 59, introducing America's first seven astronauts.
These men, the nation's Project Mercury astronauts, are here after a long and perhaps unprecedented series of evaluations which told our medical consultants and scientists of their superb adaptability to their coming flight.
That was then, showcasing seven astronauts who would go into space or train for it. Now, last week, NASA introducing private companies that will step into a lot of that work. Joining us right now from Los Angeles is Buzz Aldrin, famously former NASA astronaut, lunar module pilot on Apollo 11. He was the second man to walk on the moon in 1969. His latest book is Magnificent Desolation, The Long Journey Home from the Moon. Buzz Aldrin, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure to join you. And if those two gentlemen are still with us in this discussion.
Yes, they are.
I'd like to greet them also. I know both of them from many events in the past.
So we're trying to figure out, us little Earthlings, what's up with the new thinking and the new planning, Buzz Aldrin. You are pretty supportive of this move, to get private companies involved, to move past the moon mission and look deeper into space. You've called it President Obama's JFK moment. Why?
Well, because I believe that we have one of the greatest opportunities right now, kind of 50 years plus after the first Mercury astronauts were announced by Keith Glennon. And this opportunity, I think, can be crafted so that it will rival the pronouncements in May 1961 of JFK. Now, why do I say that? Well, because the transition from the shuttle system and the space station that is being extended appropriately to beyond low Earth orbit opportunities I think is one that has to be fully appreciated. The Columbia accident really opened up an opportunity because before that accident in February 1st of 03, NASA people and I think the country would have gone along with flying the shuttle until 2020 or maybe even 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the accident board considerably shortened that by talking about retiring it in 2010, and they also made a recommendation, which I questioned a little bit. They said separate crew and cargo, but they added the phrase in the launch vehicle. Now, to me, that opened the door to having a launch vehicle for the crew and another launch vehicle, a bigger one, for the lander and much more cargo, and that's two launch vehicles, departing considerably from the launch implements of the space shuttle system. Originally, it was going to be using them quite directly, the four-segment solids and the space shuttle main engines, but rather quickly it deviated from that. And then began a process of designing a new rocket and coming up with new upper stage engines, ones to replace the space shuttle engine. And it departed considerably, ran over budget, began to stretch out, and basically two launch vehicles to replace the shuttle system was the wrong decision.
Buzz Aldrin, if I may ask you, we've got China apparently aiming to go to the moon, maybe walking on the moon by 2025 or something like that. And
wonderful. I encourage that. I think all of the experience that we accumulated 40 years ago mm-hmm. in humans going to the moon and in studying that for the last 4, 5, 6 years to implement the Constellation program, all of that can be brought to bear to assist all the international countries that want to have activities toward development and their own exploration of the moon. We've explored the moon and will continue to do that with robotic activities.
So where are we aiming now? If not the moon, what's the destination, the goal?
Settlement on Mars is clearly the destination that should be articulated in a two-phase policy program for the future. The first phase of it is what we've been calling the flexible path, and that, I think, logically goes for the next 10 years to the 50th anniversary of the first lunar landing, and then it is reaffirmed in its ultimate destination, not really ultimate, but next major destination, which is Mars settlement, which will probably take another 15 years. So we're talking about a potential 25-year two-phase program where we switch our destination from one place that we have been to
yep.
40 years ago, and it would be 50 years by the time we get there. We're going to emphasize foreign policy cooperation led by the United States in something that might be called a Lunar Infrastructure Development Corporation.
But Buzz Aldrin, we're so honored to have you with us. I want to bring Howard and John in here just to get their views on where this is headed. We've got a lot of listeners coming in as well. But Howard Perfect. McCurdy, if you could, Buzz Aldrin says, let the Chinese go to the moon, even, you know, work with them on that. But it's time for the U.S. to be looking further out into space, to Mars and Mars settlement. Do you see that path laid out in the new Obama proposal, Howard?
I don't see a path that's ultimately laid out in the proposal, and that's what you'd like to see filled in. But let's observe that Project Constellation was not going to get us to our ultimate destination. The ultimate destination in the vision for space exploration in 2004 was to use the moon as a base camp for testing technologies to get further out into the solar system,
right.
the inner solar system.
Uh-huh.
And Project Constellation wasn't going to do that because we weren't investing in technology and we weren't investing in propulsion. The existing rockets and spacecraft that were going to take us back to the moon were eating up all of the money, and we were, in effect, substituting one destination for another. We were going to be stuck on the moon if we continued down the path we were continuing down. So Buzz is absolutely right. If your real vision is to move around the inner solar system with with humans and robots. There needs to be investment in technology, and there needs to be investment in propulsion. And Augustine Committee pointed out for what we'd spend in 1 year on Project Constellation, we could invest in private industry developing rocketry that would get humans to low Earth orbit. And they said that's just a great, it's a 10-to-1 investment over what we would be making otherwise in Project Constellation.
So John Pike, we're not ignoring the safety considerations. We're assuming that they're not going to aim to kill astronauts, as you put it. But what about the division of labor? Let private companies deal with the kind of shuttle work up and down have NASA look further deeper, as Buzz Aldrin says.
Sure. Let me make 2 points. The first one is, it's been private contractors all along. I mean, 90% of the people who are working on the Apollo program were in private industry. It's just a question of how much government supervision they have. That government supervision was reduced, as Howard McCurdy pointed out, on the shuttle program back in the 1990s, and the result was that we killed the Columbia crew. I think my other point is, we need to have clear near-term objectives, deadlines. And I've been saying for some time the problem with the Constellation program is we did not have a hard deadline. I've been saying let's send Neil and Buzz back to the moon for the 50th anniversary. Let Mike go along as well. That's a clear deadline. Everybody can get behind that, and we would know whether or not we were on path to make that deadline. But without a deadline like that, the money's going to go in and nothing's going to come out.
Buzz Aldrin,
hey, John,
what about it?
Hey, John, we're all going to be 90 years old. And Neil has other things to do in the aviation business, and I have other things to do in the going to Mars business, and nobody's going to want to send us back there.
Buzz, everybody liked sending John Glenn back up. Everybody would like to see you back on the moon. I think they would.
Well surely, with all respect, we must have a new generation of astronauts coming up. But
they'll have to go with him, you know. It's not just going to be them.
Buzz Aldrin, what about the concern that without an express target and budget attached to it, we may get private industry involved in low Earth orbit, but the bigger dreams just atrophy?
Well, I agree that we're going to have the same kind of NASA oversight of the commercial people who are putting more effort into their design, their refinements of the design and the construction of the commercial vehicles that are going to carry out. Let me take one example that seems to be so far rather endorsed by NASA in what's called the Commercial Crew Development Program.
Okay.
They singled out recipients for $50 million, and the leading one that got $20 million was developing a spacecraft that was patterned after 25 years ago, the Russian Bohr 4 and the HL-20 that NASA Langley studied for over 8 years and $800 million with wind tunnel tests and so forth. It's a lifting body runway lander, and I think we need to give very strong thought to following 30 years of flying a very advanced, large spacecraft, the space shuttle, and bringing it back, and once it gets into lower atmosphere maneuvering, we have very successfully landed it on a runway.
So you're saying that's an advantage to lean on all that research and bring back, what, a successor to the shuttle, in effect?
Absolutely. The American people don't want to see us going back into the ocean again the way Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo was, and landing in a desert the way the Russians and the Chinese do with a vertical cushioned impact on the ground. Wings and wheels can be used very effectively in the Earth's surface to low Earth orbit and back return. When you get into the details of it, the Orion spacecraft that was going to bring people direct back from the moon is one way, but there's another way, and that's bringing people from the moon and elsewhere even further and aerocapturing as they come back to Earth orbit, and then transferring them to the specialized
Earth to orbit and return commercial spacecraft. And,
but you're talking about all that in commercial terms with NASA oversight. I want to look more at the detail of that. Buzz Aldrin, please stand by. Let's hear from our listeners, if we may. Stephanie, first in Waterbury, Connecticut. What do you think, Stephanie, about what you're hearing today?
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I just love your show.
Thanks.
First of all, I'm really excited. I am thrilled because I believe that we need to diversify. You're absolutely right. 90% of the space program has been built by outsiders for a long time. So most of us pretty much know what we're doing. I do have one question, however, that is, who's coordinating everything? I know that we're going to have outside interests building low Earth orbit projects, but who's coordinating them? Who's going up in them? Is it still the astronauts that we have now? Are there going to be new astronauts from the private sector? Who's coordinating all of the launches so that they don't, bump into each other?
Yeah, let us pick it up, Stephanie, and thanks for your call. Howard McCurdy, how about it? Who's coordinating? Will it be government astronauts or private astronauts?
It's different. If you want to think of a model that's being used, think of the one in Antarctica where to get to McMurdo Sound from New Zealand, you basically go on a contract airline. It's like flying United Airlines, except it's not United Airlines. They're contracted. The National Science Foundation does not operate an airline service between New Zealand and McMurdo Sound. That's basically done by another group. So the coordination is of a very different type. What the Augustine Commission has done is they've embraced the aviation model. When you ask who would fly, well, the answer is, when you go back to 1925 and 1939, that the companies engaged in this would not only carry the mail for the federal government, but they'd also allow people to purchase tickets.
And you're talking about the Norm Augustine headed up a commission at the request of President Obama, former head of Lockheed Martin, to look at space flight there. But surely NASA would still be overseeing all this, one would think. But is that not clear?
Well, ask John Pike. I mean, that's a very interesting question, and he raises the concern about that.
John, what about it?
The taxpayers are going to be the only people buying tickets from the space lines, and that's why it's fundamentally different from the aircraft analogies that Howard has mentioned, because when we pay somebody to fly us down to Antarctica, there are thousands, tens of thousands of other airplanes and other pilots flying around the world, and we're buying a commodity service, whereas if the NASA is the only customer, it's not like we're just hitching a ride on a spaceship that has been perfected by extensive commercial spaceflight the way we're hitching a ride on an airplane that's been perfected by extensive commercial airline industry. It's fundamentally different.
Buzz Aldrin, do you see NASA remaining at the heart of all this, or will it just be sort of, you know, wide open up there and commercial interests shooting off to wherever they choose?
Well, what we need the commercial transportation to low Earth orbit to do is to transport people going to the space station and back. U.S. astronauts, scientists, whatever their destination and specialty is, and foreign people going to the space station. But we don't need to train them in how to operate the spacecraft, whether it's a capsule or whether it's something that lands on a runway. That person, those people, are the operators of that spacecraft, just like the pilot and the co-pilot and the crew is of the charter aircraft that takes people from New Zealand down to McMurdo. They don't all belong to the contract people. The National Science Foundation scientists are being taken down there. So the commercial operators are going to have a career field of flying that commercial spacecraft, and I hope it's a spacecraft that lifts off vertically on something like a reliable Atlas V commercial launch vehicle.
It's a brave new world. Buzz Aldrin, I know we have to let you go. We're so honored to have you with us, second man on the moon. Thank you very much. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about NASA dropping the shuttle, dropping a return to the moon, turning to private companies, and whether we are as a nation retreating from space or finding A better way in, a better way out there. Howard McCurdy joins us from the American University. John Pike is here from globalsecurity.org. Howard, John, we've got a lot of people waiting to get in here. Let's go to Brandon in Frederick, Maryland. Brandon, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I have 2 points. The first one is, as has been said, the private industry is already making rockets. And as that expands and grows, I think in terms of the knowledge at NASA, NASA's loss is going to be industry's gain. These high-speed folks at NASA are just going to go to private companies and probably make a lot more money. And, you know, they may no longer be NASA employees, but they'll be part of, they'll be working for private companies.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing, Brandon?
Well, I think it's a good thing. The one, so far we've managed to keep space, most manufacturing for space within the U.S., and I think it's that's critical. It's a national security issue. I think what we have to watch down the road, if it's solely private enterprise, you know, we have to watch the risk of companies moving manufacturing to where it's cheapest, maybe offshore, overseas. We need to make sure that stays in the United States for national security reasons. I think that's the main thing we need to avoid.
Brandon, interesting point. Thanks for calling. John Pike, how about it? Could we privatize and then see it just go offshore and we're earthlocked again? And
no, I'm not worried about that at all.
Why not?
Well, the Delta and Atlas programs, rocket programs that we're using right now, that I think we could use to return to the moon to fly to a near-Earth asteroid at least, those rockets, their anchor customer, the agency that designed them, was the Air Force. The Air Force, the National Reconnaissance Office, they're not going to fly on foreign rockets. And as long as we have a large military space program, which we're going to have for the foreseeable future, there's going to be a big expendable rocket industry here in the United States.
So that will continue to be here. Howard McCurdy, what about the issue of expertise? Do you see that atrophying if private companies are stepping up for low Earth orbit here? Does NASA maintain some deep Earth specialization, deep space that nobody else would have or not?
I think it's already atrophied in NASA, and it's been doing that for at least 20 or 30 years. NASA's been contracting out a lot of its in-house technical capability to private industry. In one way, that's a good thing because it disperses that technical knowledge. In another way, it's a bad thing because you don't want people at NASA just to be paper pushers. You want them to be rocket scientists. So there's a real concern that NASA, by relying on contractors exclusively, loses its technical capability. That's why the Augustine Group was very firm in saying, take the money you're going to save from Project Constellation and invest it in technology, in advanced propulsion technology, closed-loop life support systems, and other aspects that will get us beyond low Earth orbit and actually get us beyond the moon.
Could you describe what you mean by that? I mean, this is your daily material, but for a lot of us, advanced propulsion like what? And is that where this program, this plan would have NASA focusing on what, some new technology for going deeper into space?
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get beyond low Earth orbit to Mars or places like that using kerosene propulsion. I'm a historian,
which is essentially what we're doing now, right?
Kerosene propulsion is the original form of propulsion.
But I mean, we've got like descendants
and hydrogen,
of that.
Mm-hmm. Hydrogen. You need things like nuclear fuels and nuclear propulsion, which would be very good for getting to Mars. It was proposed back in 1990 when we were first thinking of doing this work, and NASA really hasn't invested in that technology. The operating programs, the day-to-day programs at NASA eat up the money that would otherwise be going to technology. So what Augustine was saying to Obama is, look, step back, invest in technology, and that base will carry you further in the long run. The difficulty with that argument is he hasn't told us where we're going in the long run. You'd like to hear that.
Buzz Aldrin says Mars. Is that obvious? Is that inexorable as the next target or not?
Well, I think that the target would be the inner solar system, your ability to move around the inner solar system, whether it's to go to gravitationally stable points or go to asteroids or go to the Mars moons or eventually perhaps a human landing on Mars. Certainly we're going with robots to Mars. But just to give ourselves the capability to move around in the inner solar system, to get beyond a couple hundred miles above the surface of the Earth, that's the goal.
And, John, do you have any doubt that it will be NASA taking the lead on that technology frontier that goes deeper into space?
Well, I don't see anybody else doing it. Yeah, I mean, there are many good reasons for I think, going to Mars, but they're all the sort of reasons that states, that countries, that nations, that peoples do. It's not something that the commercial sector is going to do, and that pretty much exhausts the list of who's got enough money to do it.
Bruce in Boston, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Mr. Aldrin, it's a pleasure to be on your same frequency. And hats off to you for all of your hard work.
Buzz Aldrin, I'm afraid, has gone on, but we'll pass it on. We'll pass it on.
Very good. To the point, this morning I watched, as a U.S. taxpayer, I watched the liftoff of the shuttle. And it's an unfortunate reaction I had, but frankly, my exclamation was, what a waste. My 11-year-old son was in the living room as well, and he said, Dad, where do they go when they go up there? So, as I'm thinking about it, it's unusual that this show is about this. But my thought is this, and my question is this. You know, the talk sounds like, ultimately, we're spending billions of dollars, and the corporations are taking a more vested interest. What is the future of this program? Is it purely exploratory? Because if it is going to be, if the foundation is in and around the colonization of Mars, I stand by my original statement. But if it's really ultimately an extension of capitalism and the domination of low Earth orbit, and ultimately into a highly profitable business of round the moon trips for the affluent, you know, what is the ultimate goal of this program? As every time I see this shuttle go into the air, I'd greatly appreciate your mission statement, so to speak, and maybe a 10-year picture.
Bruce, let us look at it, and thank you for your call. Howard McCurdy, Bruce, and maybe his son, want a sense of, you know, what's the point here, and particularly with the commercial development in low Earth orbit. Now, in the immediate term, I guess it's just to get people to the space station for a while until private companies are ready. We'll just have to pay the Russians to take them up.
Yeah.
But is the point to develop, you know, private industrial capacity here, as Bruce puts it, to extend capitalism into space?
The ultimate purpose of the space program is to allow humans and their machines to move around the solar system. As they move out, commercial entrepreneurs follow in their wake, and right now they're basically out to about geosynchronous orbit. And yes, that will become a citadel of capitalism. That was what the space station ultimately became. It was supposed to be a jumping-off point for the moon and Mars, but in fact it transformed itself into a microgravity research laboratory in the hope that there would be commercial spin-offs from that kind of activity that would benefit the economies of the world. That's why a lot of nations joined with us in putting up research modules for this microgravity research facility, and why the Obama administration was unwilling to let the space station fall in the Pacific Ocean a few short years after assembly completion.
How has that worked out, John Pike? Do we see enough commercial activity up there to support commercial launches and commercial research in their own economic terms?
Well, we do for communication satellites. We do for imagery satellites, and that's about it. They basically demonstrate the fact that the best way to make a small fortune in space is to start out with a large fortune. Now, I mean, there are some potential commercial applications. I mean, I think we need to be looking at mining the moon for helium-3 to power fusion reactors. The big problem with the Bush administration moon landing plans, both back in the 90s and more recently, is that they were HAL plans. They did not address the question of why we would go to the moon. Well, now, I mean, if Buzz doesn't want to go back to the moon, at least we could look at the moon as a source of electrical power from fusion reactors. But the Bush administration, this most recent one, didn't look at that. All they were doing was drawing rockets. They were not looking at why we would want to go to the moon. And without a why, all this money simply doesn't make much political sense, and so the result was not surprising. The program was canceled.
Let's go to Brenda in Aiken, South Carolina. Brenda, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to be a fly in the ointment, but I think this is a horrifically bad move. We're not going to save any money for the taxpayers. In fact, it's going to cost us a lot more. because we're now going to have a lot more government employees for oversight of these private companies. We're going to have to oversee how they do their training. We're going to have to oversee safety, how the money is spent, how to prevent graft and corruption. The private companies will hire people who will work for the least money in order to maximize profits. We've seen this with privatizing the charter schools, privatizing war, and everything else. Not to mention, once it's in private hands, how do we prevent sabotage and espionage, much less incompetence?
Brenda, let's say that it becomes routine to go into low Earth orbit. At some point, why not extend the system that is at work on Earth into space, at least that layer of it?
And that's a great point. Once it's routine, but unless we're a lot farther along than I think we are, we're nowhere near that.
Yep. Brenda, thanks for your call. Howard, is it going to be the government who's the number one customer here? And if so, do you have a real economy at work in this low Earth space travel shuttle business?
One of the fascinations of spaceflight is you never know how it's going to turn out in advance. And Brenda raises very real concerns. But let me raise the opposite point of view. NASA's had I don't know how many chances at the plate to develop a low-cost launch vehicle for low Earth orbit since 1972, when that goal was set by Richard Nixon. And it has not been, it has not had the capability of doing that, either with the space shuttle or with the successors to the space shuttle. They're now in government storage facilities like the X-33. Mm. So I think a lot of people are saying, well, you know, they've had their chance. Now it's time for the private industry to step up and see whether or not they can cut the cost of spaceflight by a factor of 10 or 2 or whatever it is and do it without a reduction in safety. So that's the current move. We'll see how it turns out. The history of spaceflight has not been kind to NASA in this regard.
Let's get a call from Charlottesville, Virginia, and Boone. Hi, Boone, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm an engineering student, and I'm entirely motivated by space. It's pretty much the reason I'm doing it. And I have questions about Congress. So this proposal has met really huge resistance in Congress, and I find it kind of ironic that we have a Democratic president proposing a free market system, and Republican congressmen in particular who want a government solution.
Because they've got NASA work in their backyards, government work.
Exactly. They're bemoaning the loss of their space pork. And it seems to me that they don't truly care about exploration or colonization or any of the great goals that NASA could have and that I think it should have. It should be its purpose. So how do we change that? And how do we get a proposal, this NASA reform, how do we get that through Congress that really doesn't care?
Boone, it's exciting to hear your young enthusiasm for space. We'll look at that, but let me ask you, which do you feel more confidence in to move on out into space, NASA or commercial work in space?
Well, I mean, around the university, the restaurants that are run best are not, I'm in a public university, UVA.
Yeah.
The best run restaurants are not the ones run by the government, by contractors, by the university. The best-run restaurants are the ones that have tons of customers in the middle of the night. They will bend corners with the way they run the cash register. Like, they'll round up down to the dollar to get more people through. The cash register breaks.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
won't shut down the place. They'll keep people coming, and the government-run stuff can't handle that. So it's a little microcosm of just exactly how the private sector can do a lot better.
There's a young engineer's appreciation for the private sector in the restaurant business. But, John, what about his question, when we look on up into space, do you see NASA? I mean, congressmen are standing up very fiercely if they've got this work in their backyards in Florida, in Alabama, in Texas. But critics have said NASA has become, in a way, a kind of expensive jobs program. How do you look at that, John?
Well, I think that was one of the problems with Constellation, that it was a jobs program, not a space program. The challenge, though, is that one way or the other, the government's going to be footing the bill for this. There simply is not the large number of customers that the caller was talking about moving the space program forward. The amount of stuff that we're launching in space today is about what we've been launching all along from the very beginning. And you've had a lot of different countries with both communism and capitalism, big companies, little companies, trying to get into space, and they all come up with the same answer, that it's about 10,000 pounds to low Earth orbit. And I don't see that there's anything that these other new companies with no experience are going to do to alter that fact. Space technology was basically perfected back in the 1950s, and there's just not too much we can do to get beyond what we currently have. We're just going to have to live with it.
Live with it. But, Howard, we assume that this is always a frontier, that there will be competition here, that Chinese, Japanese, India, I mean, even Iran put a spacecraft with, what, a mouse and a turtle last week up. Whatever the Obama administration does here, do you see new technology emerging globally that's going to push us on out, as Buzz Aldrin says, maybe even to Mars?
I'd really like to know why it is that the Russians have a rocket system, the Soyuz, that can launch at least one-third the cost of the space shuttle. Now, maybe they just pay people less in Russia. That might be the case.
That has something to do with it.
Do they have technological advantages? Is there an advantage to staying with the same system for 30 years and incrementally improving it the way you do with cell phones and television sets and automobiles? And as to the listener's comment about using Outback as a model, the Augustine Committee addressed that directly, and they said that we're not going to have production efficiencies until there are frequent flights, and right now, as John Pike points out, there aren't frequent flights in spite of the great commercial potential of space.
In a word, do you see us in retreat then, Howard, moving forward, ?
I think it's a question mark. I think there are two doors, and you can go through one of the two of them. You can go through a door that basically makes us moving beyond the moon, as Buzz Aldrin has proposed, or there's another door that uses this as an entrance to closing down the human spaceflight program after the space station is decommissioned.
John Pike, we're going up or are we coming down here?
I'm afraid we're coming down. I don't see us going up.
We will continue watching. What a fascinating story. We're very grateful to each of you for guiding us through. John Pike at globalsecurity.org. Thank you very much for being with us today, John. And Howard McCurdy, author of Inside NASA and Faster, Better, Cheaper. Howard McCurdy, thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.